Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Well, 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 Jimmy Conrad, Heath Pierce, we are back and we are talking World Cup qualifying for CONCACAF. Two match rounds are down. To give you a quick update on the standings, if you don't already know, Mexico sit perfect on 6 points, Panama on 4, Canada 2, Honduras 2, US 2, El Salvador 2, Costa Rica on 1, Jamaica the only team on 0 points. As a reminder, we're playing 14 games in this qualifying campaign, so there's plenty of time to go. But today we are going to preview the US playing away to Honduras, as well as the other matches coming up. Kegelasso Pod starts right now. And for those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave Kegelasso a rating and a review. It only takes a few seconds, and it helps us to continue to make free episodes like this one. So for those watching on YouTube, like, comment, and make sure you hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you can make sure that you get this every time we go live or there's a content post going on. And you can listen to Kegelasso Pod on your smart speakers. You could say, hey, Alexa, play the latest Kegelasso podcast, or hey, Google, play the latest episode of Kegelasso podcast. Pretty fun. I've tried it. It's actually, and it works. So that's pretty great. Jimmy Conrad, what is going on, man?
I actually pay Heath Pierce to come over to my house. I say, hey, Heath, can you press Kegelasso podcast on my smart speaker?
Yeah. You can have a smart speaker, or you could just tell me to do it and I'll come over to your house and do it.
No, I'm doing okay. I am back to being cautiously optimistic about this game against Honduras. I've got my varsity jacket on, my U.S. men's national team varsity jacket on. So I'm trying to get out the positive vibes. Obviously, there's a lot to get into with Weston McKennie being sent home, Gio Reyna going back to Dortmund to get his treatment, Sergiño Dest out for this one because of an ankle injury, us calling in Jackson Yule, a holding midfielder who was part of our Olympic team that didn't qualify. Maybe I shouldn't have led with that. I actually think he's a talented young player, but he was part of that team that didn't qualify, the captain of that team. He does provide some cover there, and obviously he can hold. He's a good passer of the ball. So it's a player that Greg Berhalter is familiar with. So that's something. Is he the guy that I think we need to unlock teams that sit back? Maybe not, but it is some cover for us, and obviously a player that can get acclimated with the team very quickly. And I think that's important to have as we try to have depth in multiple positions. So I don't know, man. I'm not on the precipice of panicking. I don't think that solves any problems. I don't think it does any good. I sometimes wish that social media wasn't around, because I'm sure the players, they have a lot of free time on their hands. Weston McKennie got creative with his free time, and that's why he's out. But for the other guys, they're probably just sitting in the room, looking through Instagram, looking through Twitter, and there's probably not a lot of positivity floating around out there about their performance. And they know it. I mean, they're professionals. They know when they play well and when they don't, collectively and individually. So I'm a little nervous going into this one, because we have not won in San Pedro Sula for quite some time. So this is going to be a big, big test for these particular group of players.
Jimmy, let me ask you this. Do you not think that, you mentioned social media, do you not think this is a part of the growth of this team, though, is having to deal? You know, you go back to the argument of like, we need more relegation and promotion and these players got to be under more pressure. I'll tell you what, they're under pressure right now. Mm-hmm. The 2018 cycle was under pressure and they collapsed. Do you think that this type of negativity is something that you build and learn from, or do you think it's just a distraction? Like, can you harness this? Can you learn from this? Can you say, you know, at least in your opinion, you know, I don't ever want to feel this again? I mean, because it's a team sport, right? It takes so many players for a result to go the right way that, do you think there's scapegoats when that happens? Do you think there's accountability? Do you think there's learning experiences? Or what's your take on the social media role within all of that?
Okay, well, specifically about social media, I think it gives players the platform to speak for themselves, which can be seen as a benefit. And sometimes it can work against particular players depending on what's been happening. In Weston McKennie's case, which was an off-the-field incident, I don't think he's getting a lot of positivity coming his way. But if it's based on performance, more often than not, I do think there are some people that'll be like, hey, keep your head up, keep going, let's get after it. But you and I both know we've been on social media long enough to at least admit that you kind of glom onto the negativity you could see 99 great things about you. You're like, yeah, I know I'm great. And then you see that one like, nah, dude, you suck. And you're like, dude, what does that guy from Tennessee who's only 12 years old think I suck? You know, and that's the thing that sticks with you for the rest of the day. And if that continues to pile on in a way that I'm sure that it is for these guys, I could see that being a bit difficult and really important. And to your point, where I think you're trying to lead me here is, can they lean on each other to navigate the high seas of the social media stuff and all of this pressure? And I think it can happen, but it has to be led, I think, from the coach. He's the one driving this. He's the one that can take the air out of the pressure. He's the one that can bring some levity and some sensibility to, hey, the fine margins are very, very thin at the highest levels, and we just need to get those tipped in our favor. Now, everything kind of went pretty great for us during the summer. And to something you had said either on HQ or on this podcast, we talk a lot, so I don't even know where we said this, but
on the phone.
Yes, that too. But I think because we won both of those tournaments, it did mask a few things. And I think we look back with a little bit more rose-colored glasses, like, oh, we played pretty well. We won two tournaments, and we've only lost one out of our last 21 games. So what kind of adversity has this group actually had to face? Now, there has been some in-game adversity, being down to Mexico with 10 minutes left in the Nations League final, and Weston McKennie stepping up and scoring on a set piece. You know, we had to save a penalty there. Like, we fought through some of that stuff. But we tried to say this, the World Cup qualifying is a whole different thing. It's a whole nother level. And the thirst and desire from these teams, especially when they're playing at home, is something different. And I get the sense in Canada, I said this before, they think they have our number. And it showed again. John Herdsman comes in after his first thing in his press conference after the 1-1 draw was, we could have and should have maybe gotten all 3 points there. That is somebody that knows I just outsmarted Greg Berhalter. Mm-hmm. We played into their vulnerabilities, to their weaknesses, which is a lack of patience, always in a hurry, lack of maturity in some capacity, both on and off the field, as we're seeing again with Weston. And we played right into their hands, and we never made them suffer. I fear with Honduras, who have two draws in their first two games, are going to see exactly what the other two teams did. And now they play with two forwards more often than not. And I'm kind of curious how we're going to counter that, because I want to get your thoughts on this, Heath, because after the game, Greg Berhalter said, we have to figure out how to unlock teams that sit behind us, sit everybody behind the ball. And I was like, we got to figure that out now. What have we been doing the last 20 games? You know, I mean, that comment makes me a little concerned.
The U.S. is the respect for this U.S. team changed, I think, considerably after these Nations League and Gold Cup games. Mm-hmm. And for by and large, probably a lot of people didn't watch those that are giving this sort of respect. You just see the U.S., and maybe you did. But the way in which they did, if I'm Greg Berhalter, the first thing I'm showing, I'm cutting up all the clips that showed the fight. Mm-hmm. Showed the fight. Like, I'm not going to show you guys all, I talked a lot about pattern play the last couple of shows that we've done, and I think that's really important. But the first thing I'm going back to is, this is the fight. This is what won you these games. Fight, 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 everywhere on the field, scrapping, fighting together, this unity, this like sort of energy that's really hard to coach against. And then from there, I'm going, okay, once we've won that, once we've won the match, like out on the battlefield, let's go and do these other things like pattern play and figure out how we're going to break down these teams. But you're right. I do think teams were playing us differently. And I think teams now, it's qualifying. If I'm Honduras, I'm thinking minimum a point, 3 points. We got 14 games to do this. We can go on a run against other people. We don't need 3 points against the U.S. to qualify for World Cup. I'll take them against El Salvador at home. I'll take them against Jamaica away and at home. In their mind, they're every team right now is building this roadmap, right? I hope they are, where you're saying, in a perfect world, you take this many points from each of these windows, and they're not looking at the U.S. Maybe they are now after the U.S.'s first couple games, but they're looking at their points in other areas where they're like October, January. That's where we're going to get our points. That's where we're going to hit 7 to 9 points in a month, and that's what's going to kick us into second place and things like that. So they're thinking right now, hey, U.S., we're just going to make it really hard for you. You got this golden generation of young superstar players. Let's see them make the play that's needed to win in San Pedro Sula, because it's going to be extremely difficult. And by the way, for those that don't know, that match is 10:05 p.m. Eastern time on Paramount Plus. So make sure you tune into that. And all these away matches will be on Paramount Plus. But Jimmy, going back to it, you made a good point. You said at least this team has made a habit of not losing on the last podcast. And I thought that was a really important distinction, because you just talked about the unbeaten run. And by the way, the CONCACAF changed the kickoff time, so I'll give you that update here. It's at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, so make sure you tune in on
whatever. Now. Come and join the pregame show. It's 7:05 p.m. on Paramount Plus.
I'll tell you, there's plenty of people on the internet that will see the kickoff time regardless, and then give you the exact kickoff time. That's 6 or 7 minutes later. So you know, make sure you just stay tuned on social media. You'll know exactly the kickoff time. But right now, it's 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But Jimmy, you made a good point about the U.S. learning to not lose and staying in these games, right? And there is a huge value in that. Do you think there's an overly large expectation we're putting on this team to have to win these games? Now we're talking about San Pedro Sula. I just look at this squad, and regardless of who you put on, with the current roster that they have, injuries and everything, no problem. You're telling me we are ranked, what, 10 in the world right now, where we have players playing at Champions League clubs that are in the double digits. You know, I think it's like 10, 11, 12 players playing at Champions League clubs in the group stages. We can't win or mix talent with hard work and get a win in San Pedro Sula. It just, I don't know if my mind is just embracing CONCACAF way too much, because you and I know the chaos and how hard it is. But like, I also go back to this rooted thing of like, but why can't we just win in Honduras?
So I think we have set up some expectations here where we won the Nations League final. We won the Gold Cup with a whole completely different team. And that maybe put a different target on our back, to your point earlier, that now teams are like, all right, these guys have a little something. They're showing that famous American spirit that they're going to fight and give you everything that they have. And now we had time to kind of sit on that. And now teams can prepare for us, starting with El Salvador. They had time to unlock us, to see where we, and we did give up plenty of chances during both competitions, and we were just probably fortunate. And maybe the balance of the soccer gods are coming back and saying, hey, this isn't going to go as swimmingly as it went the time before. And Tyler Adams came out after the game and basically said, we're just a group of names on paper. Like, we still have to go out there and play. And this is a point I made before. It doesn't matter what you did before. Nations League final, Gold Cup, great. Cool. Beat Mexico twice, awesome. Cool. Play for the Champions League, great. What you're going to do in the future, amazing. Good job with that. What are you going to do right now? When the whistle blows, what are you going to do? And I think that's what I learned through my time with the national team. It doesn't matter if you played in Europe. It doesn't matter if you are a youth national team star that's gone all the way up through the 15s, 17s, 20s. Now you're with the full team. It doesn't matter. Are you ready right now? Are you ready when the whistle blows? I don't care if you play in the Premier League. I don't care where you play. You have to show up and play right now. And I feel like we don't have enough of those guys that have clicked on, and we got to show up now and fight. Now, you made a point way back in the Gold Cup coverage, so I'll shout out to all the Que Golazo listeners that were part of that journey with us for the Gold Cup, where we need enough guys. They don't have to be 10s every game, but we need a lot of guys to be 7s and 8s, right? And they have to play that performance. And I think if we look at the last two games, we don't have enough guys at 7 and 8s. Man, we don't have anybody at 10, but we don't have any like enough guys at 7 and 8s that's going to help kind of tip the result in our favor. And I think we did in both of those competitions. We had enough 7 and 8s throughout the field. And you don't need all 11. You just need 6 or 7 guys that are just feeling it and can drag everybody else along. And right now, we're either shutting off at the wrong time, guys aren't locked in, they're getting frustrated. And Alex, actually, I want to mention the pattern play that you mentioned. I get the sense that Greg has given them ideas to how to unlock defenses. It'd be really weird if he hadn't at this point. When Christian Pulisic comes out after the game and says, we need new ideas, for me, that's a shot at Berhalter, honestly, because I think Greg has given them that. They're trying to do the things that Greg wants them to do, and it's not working. And they're continuing to try what Greg wants them to do, and it's not working. And at some point, you have to just, hey, I can only do so much from the sideline. I can only prep you in so many ways. You have to take what the game's giving you. And I don't think we're doing a good enough job of that. And where I think Honduras in particular are a little bit vulnerable are on crosses from out wide and also on set pieces. You can get at them. That's where we can have success. That's how we scored against them in the Nations League semifinal when Pifo got a header at the end of the game. We have to take that then. These are their vulnerabilities. Let's exploit those vulnerabilities. Instead, I feel like we want to score the pretty goal all the time. And that holds us back because that's not going to get you success in CONCACAF. Even when we try to play that way, it's still not aesthetically pleasing because we can never establish a rhythm because the other team is doing so well of sitting so many people behind the ball.
Yeah. Jimmy, I want to get your take on this. Is it surprising to you, given the lack of World Cup qualifying experience, that the team is struggling? Because for me, I'm not surprised that they're struggling because you struggle in CONCACAF. There is no way. Mexico have just, by chance, they're on 6 points. But they've struggled in their own ways, right? And what we expect from Mexico and the players that they have and the quality
Dude,
that they
have. Dude, their fans want their coach out. They've won the first two games. I mean, you tell me how they're playing.
And so, you know, for me, that struggle is not surprising. It's surprising that we're talking about having new ideas in the attack. And I keep, whenever we go down this route, I go back to moments in the game and I'm thinking like, man, when I watch Gio Reyna play at Dortmund and he's connected to, okay, it's Haaland. But when he's connected, he's playing off the shoulder. 1-2, tight passes, pulling defenders in and out of spaces, darting little diagonal runs that open up space with Royce. And I'm not saying that we have those players up top because Josh Sargent isn't Haaland. But there are still just fundamental patterns of play and build-up situations and game-like things. The game is fluid, right? And you and I have played against a team that high-press you for 5 minutes and all of a sudden they're sitting on top of their box. And you have to have the IQ. And the one thing that I know these players have more than our generation is that IQ of playing against different types of players, playing in different types of systems, playing at a higher pace, having better ability to break down teams because the game is constantly changing. Now the game is faster and all these other things that you could talk about. So why are we struggling so much to even get into good spots to take those chances? Because we get up there and it's like, you know, Serginho Dest in the game. He does a spectacular moment, and then the ball comes back to him a second later, and he kicks it back to the defensive line, and he's up on top of the box. And I'm like, that's not how we need to be playing right now. Right, we've got them up against the ropes. Go at him again. Go at him again. Go at him again until they're uncomfortable. You know, let's go at him. But instead, we went back to this rhythmic system where, again, in Barcelona, keep the ball. We're going to wear you down a different way. But in that moment, it was an indicator to me that Serginho Dest didn't understand the time and place, that we've got them a little bit nervous. And instead of one of our best players on the ball,
off the hook.
Yeah, you let them off the hook. And now you got to start all over again. And so, you know, I want to get you.
There's two things I'll jump in here and say. One is, I think you're talking about risk and using that IQ to take smart risks in some ways, right? Take the advantages when they're given to you. Now I'm talking about, you know, more often than not, if there's space out wide, take that wide space and whip it in. And doesn't matter if you hit your target or not. There's still so many opportunities that can come from a deflection. That we almost had a couple own goals against Canada because we hit some hopeful balls into the box. Yeah, it's not always pretty. And sure, we're not combining and doing 17 passes to score or whatever it may be, but they were still dangerous. And you could sense after those moments, Canada was like, oh shit. You know, like this, we're getting close on scoring our own goal. And we actually didn't even talk about that after the game. But those are the crosses that I'm talking about. You start putting them in dangerous areas. And if they don't clear them in good spots, we get corner kicks, which were good on set pieces. We can win the second balls if they do clear them out to the top of the box. But if we all have to be on the same page, like this is what's going to happen. Because when everybody's on the same page, you get out of reactive mode and you get into anticipatory mode. And you're thinking about, if this ball breaks here, I'm going to be here. And you know what? Brooks is behind me. He got me covered because we all know we're thinking about how we're going to try to win this second ball in a meaningful way. So there's that part of it. Taking those educated guesses and taking risk. And maybe we're not seeing that enough from our number nine. Were we offside once against Canada? I don't remember being offside once against Canada. And we have to look back at that. But that just shows you that we're not taking any kind of like trying to get in behind, even if there's really no space. Are we doing something to move those center backs around? Are we trying to make those darting runs that you're talking about from Erling Haaland or what these guys see over in different leagues? So that's one. The second thing that you mentioned that stuck with me, yes, these guys are more talented. They're most likely smarter than we were as players. They have shown through the summer that they have that grit that I think we're talking about that is necessary to be successful at anything. I wonder, and this might be the old man yelling at the get off my lawn or whatever, you know, the has-been player that's yelling at the next generation. I wonder sometimes about entitlement. And I see it with some of the younger players that I coach here in my area at the fourth division with the USL League Two San Francisco Glens, where they just think they're owed something. And dude, I don't care if you won the Nations League. I don't care if you won the Gold Cup. Nobody owes you shit. Nobody owes you anything. And you have to go out there and fight for that respect every single play, every single game. That's how it works. And I wonder if we maybe bought into our own hype a little bit because everything went so well for us that, hey, now that we're merging these two teams from the Nations League and the Gold Cup, we're going to be a super U.S. team and everything's going to be golden, you know? And so I don't know. I don't get that sense, but I do see that from this generation, there is a bit of entitlement and that people owe us something and nobody owes you anything.
I will say this, Jimmy, and then we'll move on to the changes that that you want to see for this upcoming match against Honduras. That the entitlement is fine. That everybody's on the same page. We're this young generation rolling through. Everybody's happy is great. But with that comes the responsibility to hold each other accountable at the highest level. And I think that's the part that I want to see is who's going to rise. We saw in the 2018 cycle, there was this huge question of who is the leader? Who's the captain that's going to grab somebody by the shirt and throw them up against the wall and be like, hey, you know, what are you doing?
It's
you
only know, Tyler Adams for me.
Yeah.
Tyler Adams is the only. Weston McKennie maybe, but at this point, he's got a lot of trust to regain from his teammates and the fans and the coaching staff and everybody.
And maybe Weston's not your typical leader and leads in a different way on the field in big moments. We've seen that, you know, Landon Donovan was a guy who led with these types of moments, but he wasn't a big rah-rah-rah guy in the locker room. He wasn't necessarily that type of leader. He was a leader in a different type of way. At least that's how I always interpreted him. But I'm still waiting to see what that next that next sort of thing is that holds these players accountable. They're all friends with each other on social media. They're in group chats. They're all these things. They comment on each other's photos. They're all actually friends in real life. And, you know, sometimes when you cross that line of friendship, it becomes hard to go back and be like, well, as a friend, I need you to do better. And if you're Greg Berhalter, who, you know, you got Tyler Adams commenting on Greg's shoe game on social media, in the media and things like that, you know, saying that he can't rock it. And there's this familial feeling, but there's this also this gray area where you don't want to see it go too far, where now it becomes hard, where it's like, you know, we've kind of come too far for me to go back and be like, hey, those games that I let you get away with, or those moments that I don't think you were there for the team. It's hard for me to go back now and hold you accountable because maybe I was with you at times that we shouldn't have been doing things that we shouldn't have been doing, or maybe I didn't correct you. And now it gets harder and harder for you to go back and be that leader and say, no, nobody's above this team. Everybody's going to step up. And I think that's partially on Greg and the players. And I'm again, going on a little bit of a rant here. Last question on this. Do you think entitlement extends out to the media and the fans?
100%. I think that, and for me, the entitlement comes from, we didn't qualify for the last World Cup and we have to fix that. That's three steps back, hopefully four, five, six steps forward. And now it's less, I don't know if it's entitlement, maybe mixed it with expectation. I expect this group of players, our quote unquote golden generation, to do it. I expected this group of players to not do the stupid crap that Weston McKennie's doing. I thought this group of players was going to look at it and be like, this is our thing. We're owning this. And I thought we saw hallmarks of that over the summer. You've talked about it a couple times about that spirit that seems that's back, and that's why the buy-in from the fans is so high. And obviously we have all these players playing over in Europe at a high level. Like, everything makes sense. And that's what you said early on. How do we not just go down to Honduras and get the result? We should have it. We have everything we need to make it happen. But it's that little bit of that gray area, that little thing that maybe we're missing, especially we haven't seen it, that's going to tip everything in our favor. And it's has nothing to do with talent or IQ. It's just the fight. We need to see that, and they have to match it. And because we lack some experience in these big games of World Cup qualifying, which is a different feel, I hope that the El Salvador game gave us a nice, that's what we wanted. That was a silver lining. Finally, we got some experience for all these players playing in a hostile environment. Honduras is going to be harder than El Salvador, and I hope that Greg's passing along that message. But yes, I do think the entitlement does come in, especially as we have casual fans who just see kind of the basic, oh, Honduras, how many people live in that country? We have 330 million here. You're telling me we can't beat that with guys that win the Champions League? You know, I get it. If I'm a casual fan, it would make zero sense to me why we can't get results. But for us that have lived through the experience, dude, it's incredibly hard because these players are fighting for something that a lot of, in a lot of different ways, both on and off the field, that if they play well against the U.S., that could be a stepping stone for them to get a professional contract or a bigger contract somewhere else. Like, all eyes are on that. Scouts are there. There's so much at stake for these players that could potentially get them out of a bad situation and into something else. And imagine that type of hunger, knowing if you played well against the U.S. or Mexico, whoever, and that could be parlayed into getting your family a house or getting them food. Or, I mean, we just can't really replicate that type of hunger because a lot of the players, we were included in this, Heath, are kids that came up from the suburbs. You know, we don't have that kind of hunger that can only be replicated when you're like got nothing left and this is your only option. And I think a lot of that is baked into this when we play the smaller nations. And for them, obviously, Honduras didn't qualify for the last World Cup. They've qualified for the previous two. I'm using them as an example because they're our opponent, but they have that. And that's hard to sometimes match. And that's always going to be a challenge for the U.S. No matter what.
Fully agree.
Sorry, I totally took that a different direction.
No. I think that's a great point, and that starts to tee up this preview between the U.S. and Honduras. Honduras rotated their squads. They played their first two games away. They finally get their home game. And again, when you talk about that mapping out or that roadmap of qualifying, you look and you go 2 points after two road games. Not a bad start. We're gonna be able to make that up later on. Yeah, you have the U.S. early, but that means you got two more games home later on that you might have in a row for Honduras. They had two squad rotations and they were able to scrap out. Again, I thought they were very, very good at just being difficult to play against. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to be at home. They're going to be in front of a different home crowd. And there's going to be this anticipation of saying, well, you know, what's better than 2 points? 5 points. And, you know, and that's going to be hard to play against and prep for. And so I want to get your thoughts. I know you've been going back to this back three quite often. I know you're a big fan of that. Is that what you want to see in this match? You know, walk me through your lineup on this one.
Yeah, good question. I'll start with Honduras first because they actually were in a 4-3-3 against Canada. As you mentioned, they rested a lot of players against El Salvador, probably hoping to maybe we'll squeak out and get a result. Only one shot on goal in that one. They created 11 shots, but only one that actually hit the target. I'll say that they gave us some problems in the Nations League final with Albert Elise, who is actually not playing in this game, which thank the heavens, because that guy has problems. He has got so much speed and he's gotten better and better as he's matured as a player, like his timing of his runs, running off the back shoulder of the center backs. And because we struggled against Canada with the counterattack in some capacity, I'm happy that Elise isn't there. Now they have Kyoto, who plays for Montreal Impact, or I guess they're not the Impact anymore, CF Montreal at MLS, who has similar qualities to Elise, but doesn't have that finished product. Like once he gets into the final third, he does lack a little bit of composure. So I'm hopeful he doesn't just, you know, pull some rabbit out of his butt and score like a banger top bins when he's going to get a chance. But he is someone to watch out for, though their coach Koito doesn't seem to really like his game. And I can see where Kyoto at times can be frustrating because sometimes he holds onto the ball when he should pass it. And then he passes it when he should hold onto the ball. We all know those players. They probably play on every men's league team around the country. But I'll say that the 4-3-3, Amador Figueroa is their captain, 172 caps, 38 years old. We got to run at that guy, but super experienced. So they're going to be tough to break down, to your point. What I think we're going to see is because El Salvador successfully sat back and made it difficult for us, saw the same thing with Canada, I think Honduras is going to do the same. They're probably going to do that anyway.
Yep.
Which means if you bring in three center backs, I think we really need to consider either bringing in James Sands, who's a good passer of the ball. And more importantly, because I watched back some of the U.S.-Canada game, there were times where John Anthony Brooks or Miles Robinson could have taken that ball and broken that first line of pressure to then invite somebody to pull out of a space, and then you make the quick pass to one of our attacking midfielders who maybe weren't as connected. So that would be, if you bring in a Sands, who is very good at carrying the ball into midfields, he's somebody I would consider. At this point, I would even consider Tim Ream, because if you have another player on the left side who's a left footer that can make a good pass, and John Anthony Brooks can make a good pass. I thought he was forcing a lot of stuff against Canada, which I understand. You get a lot of the ball, the team's giving you that space, you all of a sudden have to be the playmaker because there's nowhere else to go and they're giving you the ball. But Tim Ream's a good passer of the ball. He can break lines. James Sands is another player we should consider. But we also have to be obviously wary of the fact that they're probably going to have some speed up top and we need to be thoughtful. And I don't think Ream or Sands are very good on the turn, you know, that recovery speed. Yeah. So that's something that I think we have to balance. But if you could have one of those two and maybe sandwich in between, and I could see Sands in the middle of a Brooks and Miles Robinson. And that way Sands, if he does get it, he can then carry the ball. And then those two will kind of just fall back into being center backs if he steps into midfield.
Yeah.
That means we'd have only Tyler Adams. Acosta would be out, who I didn't look like he looked too comfortable. I didn't think Legette looked all that comfortable. So obviously missing McKinney and Reyna doesn't help us. But the two wingbacks, I'd stay with Anthony Robinson. I actually think he's been our best player through the two games. I don't know who you put it right back at this point. Dess isn't available. Do you go back to Yedlin? Maybe stay with Yedlin there. I wish Reggie Cannon was available. He'd give us a different option. You could actually put Kellen Acosta there as well. But those guys have to be ready to hit in crosses. And then from there, you have your front three.
Would you put Moore?
Is Shaq Moore in the team?
I think so. Is he not?
I don't think he's in the team.
He's not in the team?
No. No, right. We only brought Yedlin and Dest as our outside backs, and we brought George Bello and Anthony Robinson as our left backs, and everybody else are center backs. I mean, you have Walker Zimmerman's another option, but in the back, I would say the front three got Pulisic for sure. I'm trying to decide if you go with Aronson again, or maybe you go with Conrad De La Fuente and then maybe bring Aronson on as a super sub. I'd consider that, but bring him on with like 30 minutes left and not 9 minutes or 8 minutes like he did in the last game for all the other guys. And honestly, I would roll the dice and give Ricardo Pepi 45 minutes here, you know, and see how he does in the first half and something, and just be like, dude, run your balls off. Just run as hard as you can, track everything down, be a big option for us. But if we think we're going to hit a lot of crosses in, then maybe PFOC is the answer. I don't know if Sargent's as good in the air as PFOC is the other guys. So I don't know. It's kind of a wide open thing for me for number nine, but why not try Ricardo Pepi at this point?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with the back four on mine again. I'm gonna go with the same back four out of just necessity with Yedlin in there, and I'm gonna go with my same Acosta. I'm gonna go with Legette. I'm gonna go with Tyler Adams. I know it's a lot of miles to put on these legs, but my confusion when I was building this lineup is again one of the themes I've been talking about that we've talked about a lot is the press, right? And there's nothing worse than a broken high press. So right. My whole thought is like, well, maybe I'm getting it. Maybe I'm thinking about this all wrong. Maybe we should be the counterattacking team everywhere we go. Maybe we should have these players like a Pulisic higher up the pitch, and we'll have a Brendan Aaronson who can spring out on the counter and then put a guy like Ricardo Pepi. Ricardo Pepi, by the way, is probably the best natural finisher the U.S. has ever had in terms of like, We're gonna get crushed. I'm gonna get crushed for saying this, but I liken him to, and not in terms of quality or where he's at, but when you watch Pepi score, his goals are very similar to a Lewandowski. He scores in every single way from everywhere on the pitch, and it looks like the goalie's making mistakes a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll slot one to the near post. He'll roof one high. He can score on a header. He can score with both feet, but it always looks like something's gone wrong for the other team. And when you see that happen over and over and over again, you start to realize he's just got this nose for goal. He knows how to hit it and when to hit it and where to make it look easy. And he's the kind of guy that I would like to have on. So I would put him on and just say, hey, prove something to me. Prove that you're ready. He's got a hot hand. It's not like he's just going to like fall apart or whatever and say, hey, when you get a chance, there might be long periods you don't get the ball. Hold up play. Just look for a player. Bring it down. Draw foul or release it. And so I'm going to go with Aaronson on the right. And I don't know. Can we go with Pulisic? Or if not, then
yeah,
Conrad,
of course.
Conrad De La Fuente, because it might be a little bit too many miles for him to go. Because I thought he would go 60 max, and then he actually had more energy than I thought. Because when it hit like 45, 50, 60, I was like, no, take him out. You're leaving him just to leave him. Yeah. But he did show a willingness to go forward. I think even better than at higher positions than previously. And then obviously sticking with Matt Turner. In goal.
Of course. My only concern is Kellen Acosta, because as much as I love his game, he's better as a six than he is as a box-to-box eight. There were times where he could have maybe been in good spots to support the play to help us unlock. And I feel like if Honduras is going to sit back, we need somebody else that I think is just better in those areas. I'd almost go with Christian Roldan if we're going to go with a back four. And maybe that's him for Legette. We don't have too many options, frankly. Our depth has been tested in a lot of different ways. So I would put Adams there. If I did back four, Adams, and then I would look for somebody a little bit different than Acosta in that spot. Yeah. And I kind of just have Christian Roldan is the player.
And that's fair. I think that's fair. The last thing I would say to that is it so hard to play against a team and create chances? Now, scoring against a team that's bunkering, that's one thing. But creating chances against a bunkering team where you go in, out the other side, now you're running at them, whip a ball in, people crashing the box, put pressure on, like, I feel like we're overcomplicating what it takes to create chances and where the space is against a team that's bunkering in. And whether it's Acosta or whether it's a Roldan, there's a simple role of getting the ball in, out the other side. Now you've unbalanced them and you're running with pace. Maybe you have an overlap. Maybe you whip that ball in. But I'm not sure we've even done that. And that's a scary thought to me, right? Like scoring against a team that bunkers in. Jimmy, you know, we used to do training sessions where you play four defenders against seven attackers. And you could go an hour without giving up a goal, right? If you're shifting well, moving, that four defensive line, it's very hard to score against when you're in the box and you're marking up and you're talking a lot and there's this sort of like pride on the line. And so I get that scoring or breaking that down can be hard. but we're not even attempting to break these things down. You know, we created that numerical advantage with the Robinson overlap that led to the goal. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh, hey, 2v1 is better than 1v1. And, mm-hmm. and like, not to overcomplicate what it takes to create half chances or create some momentum. And I feel like maybe they're overcomplicating what it's going to take to have to score.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that we could simplify things, and ultimately it gets back to my point of, and I know it's a lot easier said than done, but just taking what they're giving us. So I'm curious to see how we try to solve some of these problems and not try to square peg in a round hole all the time. And then everybody gets frustrated, and then the other team gets confidence because they can see that we're frustrated. Anyway, let's get to my bets.
Yes,
I've been very, very biased the first two match days going, obviously, I'm never betting against the Americans. I'm not going to bet against them, but I am going to be a little bit more pragmatic here. I think that even though the sky's going to be falling for all the fans, I sense we're going to get another draw here. And that, I think, is where the best value is. Plus 210 for the draw. Straight up for the U.S. to win is minus 163, I think.
Is there a goal out there? Is there a goal out there for the U.S., you think?
Potentially. What I was going to say is there is one bet that I would probably look at even more. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this. And it's really good value. Sorry, my whole thing got... here it is. So they give you value on coming from behind to win or draw. And I kind of want to put money on both because it's plus 600 for Honduras to do it. We just saw the U.S. give up a lead to Canada where they fell asleep. And it's plus 460 for the U.S. to come back from behind and draw against Honduras. And I feel like if that is how the game played out, we'd all be like, oh, man, we came from behind to get a goal to score against Honduras. We did it in 2017 and Bobby Wood scored the 85th minute. Like that feels like a win, you know? So I feel like we had the draw there in El Salvador, you know, 0-0. Then we had the lead and gave it up. Now maybe the script's going to be reversed and we're going to do that and maybe feel somewhat okay, but it's really important for us. And I'm sure Honduras is saying the same thing. We got to finish this match day with something. We want to end it on somewhat of a high note. Both are going to be going for a win, but I think cautiously going for a win, which means I think it could lead to a draw. I like plus 210 for the draw, but those other two values, just to kind of have it covered, if you think there is a goal in this game, coming from behind to win or draw, plus 600 for Honduras and 460 for the U.S., you could put $10 on both and still come out a pretty big winner.
I like that. I will say capitalizing on vulnerability is what the U.S. has to be able to do both home and away. You can smell it. You can feel it when you're in the stadium. You know when there's this shift, they need to capitalize on that. Goes back to my point about Dest. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we continue our qualifying previews. We're going to talk Canada, El Salvador. We're going to talk Costa Rica, Jamaica, and Panama, Mexico. We will be right.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Back. Okay, everyone, we are back. Jimmy, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
Both from a point of passion, from anger. We've also, hopefully, given some good insights on what we think is going to happen and what's going on within the U.S. side. But moving on, we're going to talk about Canada, El Salvador. Fonzie's being assessed with his injury. Obviously came out against the U.S., was the most dangerous player. Everybody was sort of, thinking the heavens, as you mentioned before, when he went out because we could breathe a little bit. It's been a long time since I've seen a player like that have that kind of impact on a game where you go double, triple team him because he looks in form and he does not fear the U.S. whatsoever. But now against El Salvador, Canada's at home. They get two home games out of their three. Obviously squandered their first one. Now playing against El Salvador, who scrapped out two draws in their first two games at home, and they're now traveling away. What are your thoughts on this one, and what are your betting tips?
I would say immediately that Canada needs to win this game. They absolutely need to win this game, and I think they have some momentum coming out of that U.S. performance against the U.S., where they were very smart and patient. I really like the patience from the Canadians, maybe something we haven't seen in the past, where they have the ability to be patient, right? Because they never necessarily had all the talent to play certain formations or different types of tactics, but now they have that, and they have some players, world-class players in their team. They're -333 to beat El Salvador. El Salvador probably kicking themselves. They didn't get more out of that Honduras game, where Honduras kind of rolled out their second string in some ways. That was a good opportunity for them to get 3 points. They could have stolen that against the U.S. as well. They get out of there, two games, two draws, two home games. They got to feel like they need at least 4 points from two games at home. They only have two. Canada, I think, are in a nice... I feel like Canada knows who they are and what they're about. Now, they struggled a little bit against Honduras. I don't think they were ready to match what Honduras brought to the table, similar to how we were assessing the U.S. But I think in this one, now that they've got two games under their belt, they got a little bit of momentum that they could have stolen all those points. They might not even need Davies in this one, honestly. Yeah, David Buchanan, who are going to be going with aggression. Kyle Larin is in good form right now. Then I just think they're going to do enough, and they seem very stout defensively. They know what they need to do, and I think if they suffocate El Salvador in the right way, they should get a result here. They need to get a result. Let's be honest. If they really want to qualify for the 2022 World Cup, they have to get a result at home against El Salvador, who on paper are probably one of the weaker teams. Now, El Salvador is not going to make it easy. We've already seen that. They had some good performances in the Gold Cup as well. So they have that riding on it, but I like Canada all the way. It's hard to bet for this one. I'm kind of going with a parlay. So I've got Canada in my parlay right now. So that's that. And then I got the draw with U.S. Honduras. So those are my two in the parlay. That's +303. If you just want to bet Canada to win and a draw on Honduras, U.S., it's +303.
I will say this. If Canada rolls out the lineup they played against the U.S., I know it was a squad rotation, but if you're reading into Herdsman a little bit more, you had the opportunity now to go, you know what? We lost a little bit of that fight against Honduras because we had a bunch of stars on the field. Mm-hmm. We've never had that before. It is really fun. We have all these good players, but we want to play beautiful football, and that's not what qualifying is all about right now. So if he rolls out that second lineup, imagine wearing down an El Salvador side only to bring on a Tejan Buchanan, mm-hmm. only to bring on a David. I'm not saying that's what he's going to do. Maybe you rotate a couple other players, but I do think there is a value in putting the team over the 11 players, your 11 most talented players, for the sacrifice of what's going to be the best chance to get a result. And they went back to that never say die out. You remember in Gold Cup, John Herdsman kept talking about, we're playing this like a final. It was like a final. He said it so many times, we laughed about it for most of the tournament. But now you're starting to see that that is actually the foundation of which he's trying to build the mentality of this team. And when they have that mentality, they get results. And so if they can do that at home, even though they're at home and quote unquote, you play differently than away, I still think there's a value in matching the other team for that intensity and fight. And then later on, if it's not working, you bring in some of these super subs that can disrupt a game and create chances for you and bring you the 3 points you need. You don't have to be great over 90 minutes. That's just sort of my take on that one.
Well, so I'm going to jump into Costa Rica, Jamaica, because I feel like it's the same vibe for Costa Rica. They're at home playing the worst team so far over the first two match days, Jamaica, who have really, really disappointed. And even though they had Mikel Antonio and Ravel Morrison for a game, it didn't feel like they, it's like, who are these guys? Yeah, they're good, but like, do they really fit the system. Like, we haven't really even played with these guys. And I think that's going to be the challenge for Jamaica, very similar to what you said about Herdsman. Yes, these are stars, but are they going to fit into what is going to give us success? Now, Jamaica looked, outside of those guys, Jamaica just looked poor on the defensive side of the ball, which was pretty crazy. That's the first time they've lost at home in Kingston since 2016 in World Cup qualifying.
Wow.
That's a bit of a surprise. And Panama just didn't squeak the 1-0. I mean, they kicked their butt 3-0. That was a really impressive performance from Panama, and I know we'll talk about them in a second. Costa Rica, though, has to view this game as, honestly, if we want to qualify, we have to win this. So I have Costa Rica winning this one against Jamaica. Jamaica, I think, are just going to have to kind of, let's say, reshuffle their deck, but kind of reassess who they are and what they're about in the next set of match days. This is one I think is just too soon to solve the problems. Mikel Antonio can't. These guys can't, their big stars can't even fly to this game anyway. So they're going back to the team ultimately that played against Mexico, who actually did show that fight. And yeah, they only got one shot on goal, but they scored that goal. And it's just interesting times for Jamaica. I want them to qualify. I love the Reggae Boys. I love the way that they play and their personality and all that type of stuff. But they still can't get away from the basics of how you survive in CONCACAF, which is the same recipe for everybody else. You have to be in there and ready to fight. And they just didn't do enough of that against Panama. I like Costa Rica. They haven't scored yet. They haven't scored in their last four games. They're due. And I feel like they know they have to win this one. And I think that that urgency, and because of Jamaica's frailties in the back, I think Costa Rica will take advantage of it. Keylor Navas will get another clean sheet. So I'll look at that line really quick. Costa Rica to win 2-0. But I like Costa Rica to win just for my parlay purposes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is one where Costa Rica comes to life. And they respond to all the criticisms that they've had so far to show that they are still a formidable CONCACAF opponent. And that happens against Jamaica, right? My whole thing with Jamaica is they defend deep, but defending deep has nothing if you don't have an intention of defending deep. They just go deeper and deeper till they're in their box, and that's a recipe for disaster, whether it's deflection goals or set pieces or all kinds of things can go wrong when you're disorganized there. And I think defaulting to a deep block is great if you know exactly, like you said, Jimmy, you get to a certain point and then it's up to those center backs to start pushing people on, releasing players, pushing out, and then initiating that press. And I don't think Jamaica have it. The only thing I do hope Mikel Antonio does is go back to England and say, guys, CONCACAF is hard. It's hard, guys. I got to give him a little bit of respect more than we do. It's difficult. So that's all I'm going to say about that one. But finally, we're talking about Panama against Mexico. The two top teams, as I mentioned, Mexico on 6 points, Panama on 4. Jimmy, what's your take on this one in terms of just who you think comes out with points or split the points or who wins this?
Yeah, I think from a betting perspective, the draw feels good because I like what Panama's done. They played against Costa Rica in the first one, and they didn't give up a shot on goal. They were a little unlucky not to score themselves. So Keylor Navas had a very good game. And then against Jamaica, like I mentioned, they were very, very good and took their chances very, very well. They're going to need to do that against Mexico. I don't think they're going to get as many chances, but Mexico does give you opportunities to score, and then it's up to you to take advantage of those opportunities. Mexico's got to feel very fortunate. I thought their penalty against Costa Rica was a little suspect without VAR. You know, Guardado does get kicked, but I'm still actually kind of upset at Oviedo, the defender for Costa Rica. He doesn't even need to swing there. Anyway, I don't need to get into the specifics, but it was a bit of a soft penalty in my humble opinion. Mexico is the beneficiary of it. They haven't looked great, but if they win this one, it would be the first time that they won their first three games in the final qualifying round since 1978. So this would be pretty monumental for Tata Martino, who seems to always be under a ton of pressure, to be able to establish that. And they have a good chance. They're on paper better than Panama. But Panama's got a little something special. They've actually really surprised me so far in these first two match days with how disciplined they are. And they have a manager in Thomas Christensen that I actually had to do a little bit of reading on. He's a Danish player, but he played for Barcelona's youth system. And he came up through there and had a couple sniffs with the first team. And ended up having to go out on loan and all that good stuff and kind of traveled around and was a bit of a journeyman from there. But he did have those signs. He speaks Spanish and he can relate to his players. And one of his most successful stints as a manager, as he started to move around from and retired, was Apoel. And he got them to the round of 16 in the Europa League, the farthest they've ever been in 2017-2018 season. And that was really, really impressive. He actually took over Leeds United for 9 months and then ended up getting sacked when they were 10th in the championship, I think before Bielsa took over or close to that time. So he's got a nice track record of having success in different areas, got some very good experiences. And I think he's kind of the ace in the hole. He's got them very well organized. I could see this being a draw, to be honest with you, which actually wouldn't help the United States. As you mentioned before, we need Mexico to just kind of be the outright, just taking the baton and running as far as they can. And then everybody else kind of fighting for the second place scraps. And that's a decent place for the U.S. to be in. But I don't think Mexico's performed so impressively over these first two match days that they're clear winners, clear favorites in this game. So I like the draw. It's plus 230, which I actually think we could see happening, where Mexico, 6 points from two games, don't really need to stretch too much. I think Panama will have, I think this could be a bit of a chess match, as much as boring as that sounds at times. But I don't think Panama is going to really let them be exposed. And I think if they can take their one or two chances, which they'll get, then maybe something can happen there. But Mexico's been fortunate, obviously scoring a late winner against Jamaica's C team in the first match day, and then getting a penalty that I thought was a little soft in match day two. So they're riding their luck a little bit. And I think it could not necessarily run out, but I just think that it's going to be stifled a little bit against a Panama team that's full of confidence and well-managed.
Yeah, I think the draw here is where I'm looking. Obviously, both these teams know that, you know, what's better than the points they're on is 1 point more at a minimum. I think Mexico obviously have the ability to steal all 3 points if given the chance. But Panama, they're riding this high right now. And if you look, they've just been clinical, whether it was an opportunity from a center back to drive down the field untouched to finish a ball off, or, you know, just clinical in the fact that 1, 2, 3 passes, again, they're going to goal, they're whipping a ball in, and they're crashing with intensity and finishing those chances. And I think there's a value in that belief of, like, we get a chance, we score. And there's something to that. I don't know if it'll be enough against Mexico in this home game. And I think if you're Panama, you're like, hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're good, but we're not great. Let's make sure defensively we are very, very strong first, and we can spring out on the counter and hopefully get a goal that either keeps us level or puts us in front of Mexico. But to expect all 3 points from the start, I think, could be difficult for this Panama side. And again, 5 points after three games,
yeah, the take
is pretty spectacular. And if you're Mexico, same thing. You're like, 7 points after three games. Okay, it's not a record, but this is the first time we're playing three and you're riding this momentum. You're in a pretty good position, because I think, you know, 18 points, maybe it was 13 got you into the World Cup when you had 10 games. You got 14 games now. So maybe 18 points will get you there. And now you've got six, you're a third of the way there. So I think that's not, it wouldn't be a huge downfall. It might be for Tata Martino and all the fans to be extremely disappointed not to take 9 points from this, because that's the expectation of the team. But that's my take on that. Jimmy, any closing thoughts on these ones?
Yeah, my only closing thought is this crazy parlay I'm going with. So Canada to beat El Salvador. I have the draw between Panama, Mexico, Costa Rica, Jamaica. I've got Costa Rica winning that one. And then Honduras, USA as a draw. If my bias comes into it, that's actually plus 2,000. So if you bet 100, you win 2,000 bucks, or bet 10 to win 200. If I change that draw for USA Honduras, I'm like, no way I'm betting against the Americans, and I get it. I'll switch that in so the US wins. It's still plus 1,000. So pretty good value depending on how you want to play that. And you could actually honestly bet both and try to see if you can still get a winner. But yeah, I'm excited about this match day three. Obviously, you and I, as not only former players, but just as fans, have a lot of questions. And I think we're going to get some answers about what this team is all about against Honduras. And I think that could be said for a lot of the other countries that are participating in this match day three, which is proving to be quite pivotal.
I like it, Jimmy. I like it. Listen to Jimmy. He gets it right more than he gets it wrong. And hey, listen, Jimmy, I'm not going to lie, man. I've placed some of your expert tips, and I've hit. So I'm not afraid.
I'm here for you, Heath. I'm here for you.
I'm not afraid to put a little money on the line on the back of your advice. So that's it from us, guys. As a reminder, you can follow the K Golasso podcast on Twitter at K Golasso Pod. Subscribe to the K Golasso page on YouTube. Hit the notification bell. And of course, subscribe to K Golasso wherever you get your podcast. And again, Jimmy and I will be with you on Wednesday after the U.S. match, or Thursday, depending on where you are in the country. Obviously, it's going to get late, but Jimmy and I are not going to go to sleep. We are going to make sure we bring you that recap right after the game, talking about the recap of all the matches from CONCACAF that day. And we will be live on YouTube for that, for an instant recap of Honduras versus U.S. men's national team, as I mentioned, as well as the other. And until next time, thank you very much. Jimmy and I are out.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.